Welcome to another episode of North American Deer Talk, where the fusion of facts and opinions become the education and entertainment for all. This is your host, Josh Newton, and we have another great show for you today. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is North American Deer Talk. So, we are video recording as well for all you folks going to watch on YouTube. Hopefully on YouTube. That's where I'm going to try to get it posted, but always good to be back in the recording studio. It is March 10th. March 10th already. Our snow is finally starting to melt, which I guess is a good thing. You guys have heard me say many times before, I like the snow. I like snow cover. And I'll need to, I set a little, reminder for myself to check when we got our big snowstorm. And it was in December sometime. But that snow's been here. That snow's still here. So in our shady areas, in our shady areas, we have 6-8 inches of snow still. But it's supposed to be like 60 today, and it's hard not to talk about spring and what that means on your deer farm. So that's what we're going to cover today. We're going to cover transition from winter to spring and kind of run through a couple things. I have some notes here, so I'm going to be partially freewheeling today, which is one of the things that I like to do, but I do want to cover some of these specific points. So the winter to spring transition, we'll talk about pen cleanup, soil improvements, overseeding, pen soil turnover, soil tests, fecal tests for worming. So a little bit of animal health in there. And I also want to cover the spring vaccinations through Servant Solutions, and then what those schedules look like, how we handle different age classes, and then the genders as well, because there is some nuances that you can put in place. Some people like to keep it easy, and we'll talk about all those things. So let's just jump right in. The winter to spring transition. Well, for us, again, northern PA. March 10th, sun's out, it's warm, snow's melting, spring's coming just like it does every year. So what is it that we can start doing to ultimately prepare for fawns? Because that's kind of what we're leading up to, and that is those babies coming. That's kind of the pinnacle of the year, having those babies hit the ground, and then it's grind all summer. So what can we do to make that a success, or what are the things we can put in place to minimize as much of the risk that there is bringing newborns into the world? So pen cleanup. Well, what does pen cleanup look like for you? Your pens are probably very different than mine. So I'll give you a quick kind of rundown of what we see here. So we have some open pasture with very little trees. Those are fairly easy. I don't really have to do much, as far as quote-unquote pen cleanup. Now, we have other pens that, they have big trees in them. 7,500 footers, and it was it was kind of full woods, river bottom-ish, but it's mostly flat. But there were selective trees cut out of there, and a lot of the stuff's really tall, and it's starting to fill out. But it gets wind damaged, and you know, the bugs hammer on stuff and the critters. Anyway, you end up getting a lot of tree limbs in the pen. So if the at a minimum, picking those up, getting them out of the areas that you need to run a mower through or you know, doing soil improvements, etc. That's something you got to do. You got to get the wood out of there. If it's like our buck pens, we have a bunch of hemlock trees, and those hemlocks, you know, kind of one by one start dying. So I dump one over in the fall, and those bucks just like rake their antlers all over those for, you know, the better part of the winter anyway. So we got to pick up all those, get those burned off. And that big stuff, you know, it's probably best to stack it up somewhere, get it out. You know, you can keep it in the pen on a stack, and those animals use it for windbreaks or whatever. That's a good use for it. You know, another thing is if you get erosion, depending on, you know, how your stuff's set up, if you have a little hill where your fence lines run, you're going to get erosion. Those logs are great to stuff in there. You know, you stuff a hay bale or something at the top of the little trench, and if you get some, you know, gappage in your fence and the ground, you know, rolling a log up and, you know, sticking a spike down so it doesn't move, a piece of rebar or something like that, and then just tacking the bottom of the fence to that log is a great way to fill holes, and, you know, it doesn't look like crap. You know, it looks like there's a nice log border. So that's one thing that you can do. But generally getting those pens cleaned up. Now, I did mention we have a river, you know, a riverbed. The farm sits on an old riverbed. It is challenging, to say the least, with the amount of rock, you know, sandstone rock that comes out of the ground when it rains. It's just a constant battle. Now, add some hoof traffic onto that, and you're going to get a lot of rocks. So there are some areas for us where, you know, the rocks need to be picked up. And I did make the mistake of burying some of the stumps that we cleaned from a few areas in the pens. And those are starting to sink now. You know, it's been 15 years. No matter how good you layer that stuff in, you know, that wood rots and it sinks. So we just take the extra rocks and debris and whatever and just put it in those holes. So that's kind of pen cleanup. We're talking some common sense stuff there. So just get things ready so it's not beating on your equipment in the summer, and as the grass grows up and that stuff disappears, you end up running over a, you know, a football size rock with your mower, or you know, cruising through your pen trying to do something, and you hit one of those bad boys and ba-boom. So anyway, get those out. That's pen cleanup. So soil improvements, I think, for us are pretty simple, and I think for most are. It really is going to start with a soil test. So doing a basic soil test, I don't know, $30, well worth it. That'll tell you where you're lacking in, you know, mineral content and pH, etc. I think pH is the biggest one that they're going to look for. That's important. You know, you want to get your pH up. You don't want super acidic soil. Generally, what we see is, you know, the acidic soil causes problems. So when we first started here on this piece of property, the soil was, you know, in the fives. That's terrible. You know, that's going to, number one, hamper stuff that can grow. And number two, those animals that are on that, it's going to challenge them. So you're not going to be able to run at capacity as far as your animal numbers go, because your pH is way down in your soil. So what types of things can we look at and say, you know, this is a good product to use. Well, you know, lime always comes to mind. So the lime that we like to use is just pelleted lime. This is pretty basic stuff, but you can use hydrated lime or, you know, ag lime, and it just depends on your your mode of spreading it, but you know, pick a lime, get it out there. It's better to get it out than not. That should help neutralize soil and put your pastures in a good environment to thrive. You know, there's been quite a bit of discussion on humic acid, which is being touted as all sorts of things. But it's obvious that as a soil improvement is a good thing. So look at that. And then, you know, whatever type of fertilizer, you know, you may want to check out. So that's something to consider too. Let's see. As far as seeding goes, we really like to just overseed. I am not. It's probably because I don't have a bunch of equipment, and that's because we couldn't even use the equipment. But we just don't turn over ground. So if you were to take a tractor and then, you know, run a disc over the back, you would get your freaking teeth chattered. There is just the rocks would just come out of the ground. So we've tried to just build soil the best we can, which is obviously hard with animals on it, but build soil and keep those rocks buried down in. And the way that I think one of the neatest ways that you can do a little bit of soil work is with an aerator. So ours is just a drum with spikes sticking out of it, you know, 3-inch spikes. We just run that over the ground, and that helps take some of that compaction out. Pretty cheap cheap unit. I'm sure you can get real nice ones, but I think that's a really good thing to do. So once we do that, you know, we'll run that over some of the high traffic areas or the compacted areas in the pens. That kind of allows the sunlight and the oxygen, et cetera, to get down in there, specifically the oxygen. And that puts that soil in, you know, a pretty good state. It settles back down, but at least you get some air in there and it breaks up that top couple inches of soil a little bit. And then we overseed. So if you're gonna do that, you know, I'm thoroughly convinced that the two best products for deer, number one is clover, white clover specifically, and there's a ton of different varieties. Find one that grows good for you, and that's, you know, relatively reasonably priced. There's one. And then, you know, we use perennial ryegrass. So in our higher traffic areas, that perennial ryegrass is pretty stout. Takes some abuse. When you get into, like, if you have more shaded areas, and we have a couple of those in the wooded areas that I talked about in those pens, a fescue, like a shade fescue. And you have to be a little careful with fescues because they have some sort of toxin or something like that. We haven't found that the deer that it's a problem. So those fescues seem to, I guess, they deep root and they create a nice little grass structure. So that's generally what we do on our pastures. Try to keep it pretty simple and clean. Now, if you are going to, and you have the capability of turning over pastures, if you have open space, I wouldn't recommend doing a whole pen at once and then putting deer on it. I would do half the pen every other year. That way it doesn't open up too much problems, because when you turn that ground, and while that's a good thing to get air and sunlight in there, it's going to bring up some problems, especially if you're on an established a piece of property that has had animals on it for, you know, extended periods of time. So beyond, you know, I don't want to necessarily put a limit on it, but beyond, 4 or 5 years, you're going to get some bacteria build up unless you're just really good about your management. But I mean, the vast majority of us have too many deer. That's been the crutch, I think, for a lot of people, is they have too many deer. So, less deer, less problems. That's pretty much the very high level, pen maintenance kind of stuff before fawns come. As far as animal health, fecal tests, I think there's probably a good amount of overworming done in our industry. People are like, oh, I got a worm. We haven't wormed for 18 months. Yep, 18 months, no wormer. I don't have any parasites here. I mean, I might, but that's not what the fecal tests show. So scoop up a pool sample. If you want to do it from a couple different pens, they're pretty cheap. It might be $20 a sample. Run a couple, and if there's no issues, don't worm. There's no sense in feeding animals something that costs quite a bit of money. That doesn't make any sense to do. So, you could spend $100 on doing fecals and maybe have saved yourself $500 in wormer, depending on the size of your farm. $1,000 a wormer? I don't know. Some of these places are big. Some it's less. But you can also say, okay, we're gonna put these guys in a good place before the fawns come. Well, that's gonna dovetail into your vaccine program. So if that's the case, you could still do your fecals, or you can do an injectable wormer as a preventative during your handling sessions. So we'll jump right into the vaccination program, and I guess what spring vaccinations are. So we're going to look at this from two perspectives. One is going to be the established farmer that already has his or her vaccine program in place. So this would be someone that is vaccinated already. All their animals have had their vaccine, they've had their boosters, they're just maintaining their program. And then the second is going to be the new farmer that is going to be doing a new vaccination program. And this is going to be true for pretty much most of the vaccines, but I'd like to just direct this towards the Servant Solutions product. So we got our PV2, which is a pneumonia and abscess, and then we have the EV1, which is a digestive-based vaccine. So the overwhelming majority of our clients use both products. It's very rare that we have someone not. And the overwhelming majority use the new vac, and then we have a few small amount of clients that do not use the EcoVac. So from the established farm standpoint, the farm that already is on a vaccine program, what do you do? Well, the basic premise of this vaccine program is to prep these guys for spring and summer, and then prep these guys for fall and winter. So how do we do that? Well, we give a shot to everybody, vaccine shots to everybody in the spring. This ends up being in the does prior to when the fawns come, and the bucks prior to antlers growing. So March 10th, I'm sure some guys have antlers coming out of the head. So again, the established farm, the person already on the program, is going to take his estimated fawning date. Let's just say that's May 24th. And they're going to subtract 30 days, April 24th. That's when they're going to handle their animals. That's when they're going to get vaccinated. So some people say, well, why so close to fawning? Well, we want to make sure that these animals are in what we consider prime condition from a health standpoint, from an immunity standpoint, when those fawns hit the ground. They're peaking as far as their immune response to the vaccine. We're going to say that's going to happen somewhere between 4 and 6 weeks. That's the optimum level. So, well, people say, Josh, you know, that's too close to fawning. You could say that. You could be uncomfortable with that. And then I could tell you that tens of thousands of deer have been run through 30 days prior to fawning for the past 10 years, and there's nearly no issues at all. You know, guys are worried about does aborting. I understand. It's a valid concern. You can look at that two ways. You can say, I have crazy deer, and the stress is going to make that happen. It's almost never the handling itself. I mean, we're not like taking a baseball bat to these deer while they're in the chute, or if you're knocking them down for whatever reason. Like, it's not like that. Like, it's stress. It's these animals getting stressed out and running up the walls in your facility or whatever. And frankly, you don't want those does. You know, you want to have some level of sustainability. Okay. So, sorry, I had to go get a drink, get talking here. It's not a concern at all. Not for me. And I would say, you know, just almost all our clients, you know, it's part of how we do things. The second reason is, you know, you're vaccinating for a reason, and that's to ultimately provide for the best conditioned does, who then give you, you know, the best conditioned fawns that you can. And we don't want those fawns getting sick. Fawns get sick and then, you know, they die or something like that. So if you have a mortality rate of, let's just say it's 20%. So 20 out of 100 fawns are dying in a typical, you know, summer into fall weaning, whatever. And let's say your goal with the vaccine program is to not necessarily eliminate, because you're never going to eliminate those kinds of problems, but let's just say it's to reduce that by half. So you want to get down to 10. If you ran, you know, if you had 100 fawns, right? That's the number we're using. That means you got 50-some does. If you ran 50 does, one of them aborted. Two of them aborted. Yeah, that would suck. Not something we want. But you lost, you know, you lost those fawns to them aborting. And then you went through the year, and instead of losing 20 fawns, you only lost 10, and you hit your goal. That'd be a 50% reduction, plus the two deer that aborted, right? So you'd be at 14, which still isn't ideal, but that's 6 less than the year before. So from net numbers, that's a win. That's a win, win, win. And that's how you have to look at this. This isn't about individual animals. This isn't about, you know, necessarily how you feel about certain deer or certain genetics. This is from an animal health standpoint and looking at those raw numbers and saying, this is what we need to do to protect our herd. So I just want to kind of dispel some of those, you know, thoughts or theories about the process. This is well established. This is a good thing. Okay, so the established farm, 30 days prior to fawning, gives their vaccines. Let's just say they're doing both the products. Okay, I'm going to give you the I don't know the best term. I'm going to give you the cheap guys schedule. That's me. I'm a cheap guy. I like very little inputs. And then I'll give you the guys that just don't even want to worry about it. So the cheap guys, they do not give the EV1 to the Bucks. And the reason is for the most part, if your adult deer are having issues relating to E. coli and or Clostridia, which are the two bacteria genres that are covered in the EV1 vaccine, you probably have a larger problem. Adult deer, for the most part, should not be getting loose stools. So we'll look at nutrition, and that's really a separate topic. But if your nutrition's spot on, they shouldn't be getting scours on a regular basis relating to these bacteria. The Nuvac, though, bucks get pneumonia, right? That happens. Bucks get foot rot. That happens. Bucks might get abscesses. That happens. So we want to make sure that they get the PB2 product. The does, on the other hand, we want to give both to. And, you're probably saying, well, Josh, you just said the bucks, the adult deer, you don't need to give them this stuff. Correct. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to prime the doe's immune system so that she can give her immunity to her fawns. Well, how does that process happen? It's called passive immunity. And passive immunity is a well-established principle in animal livestock. And basically what it says is the antibodies that the doe has at the time of birth for her, in this case, fawns, will pass in the colostrum to those fawns. Okay, so that's an interesting kind of concept, right? How do we maximize that? Well, I think the vaccine is a great way to look at that. So you say, okay, we're gonna inject a vaccine into these animals, which has coverage for the major bacteria that deer face that we've found through years of sampling. What are those bacteria? Fusobacterium, Trouperella pyogenes, Bibersteinia trialosi, Pastorella maltosida, Mycoplasma. Those are the big five. Deer do get other things. We just have not found them at scale. Doesn't mean we won't. We just haven't found them at scale. And these are the things that we consistently find farm to farm to farm all across the country. Okay. Back to the animal. So we inject them with this vaccine. The body has an immune response to that. And in the simplest terms, I like to look at it as an education process. So you put the vaccine shot in. The body says, whoa, whoa, whoa. What is this stuff? The immune response starts. The body, sends its little warriors out. They defeat the bacteria, and then they create antibodies, proteins. And then those antibodies are stored for a certain period of time through this process. We'll call it an education process because the body has seen it. It recognized it. It learned that if this is seen again, that this needs to happen. So there's a certain level of those antibodies, and we're trying to capture them at their peak. That ends up being 4 to 6 weeks post-injection. So that's why we schedule our timing, 30 days prior to fawning. And these antibodies, these immunoglobulins, which are proteins, are found in colostrum. So the fawns are born, they drink from mom, which is the most important thing that happens, and they get these immunoglobulins, these antibodies, these proteins. And that's why it's so important to have these does conditioned, have them get their vaccine shots, have them have these antibodies, have them have excellent colostrum. And this is why we don't recommend on scale giving anything to fawns, really. Now, are there some supportive items that we can use to help enhance this? Yeah, there are. And we'll cover those on another show. But the basic premise is to remember that we're prepping these does so the fawns get everything they need up front. And this is probably the most well-established animal, we'll call it animal immunity system that I know of for young neonates. And it's just something that we, as deer farmers, I think, kind of lose sight of. And we should stop that. We should stop losing sight of what that is and educate ourselves on it. And everybody has a little different view of what that is. But for the most part, the concept itself, as I generally described it, is accurate. So do a little homework on that. Do a little homework on the passive immunity and that concept. We have an article there on the Servant Solutions website. You can check it out. All that stuff's free. But that's kind of where that came from. So that covers the established farm. Both those vaccines are then given to those does. So the does get the PV2 and the EV1, and the bucks just get the PV2. Done. Now, timing on the bucks. Now, prior to antlers growing, you can get up until about April. You're going to have some bucks that have antlers, and if you're running them, there is a possibility of damaging them in the handling facility. You can take that risk if you want. That's up to you, but you got to do them a little earlier. That's the poor man's technique. I think I call it poor man. Cheap man. That was me. I'm cheap man. For the guys that don't want to mess around with that, everybody gets two shots. Does, bucks, doesn't matter. That's fine. And I think for the folks that have some Clostridia type A issues, that's very important. Now, on to the new farmer and the process of getting into a vaccine program. It can seem a little overwhelming if you haven't done it before. It's not. And it will start to just become how you need to do things to have some success in your health management. And I believe you're gonna have to accept these things. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't places that are successful and don't do this. That's not the case. But the overwhelming majority of people do need to do this to be successful, I believe. It's not something I'm walking away from. I fixed so many problems at our place just with this kind of basic health management program and looking at things a little bit differently than most others. And I think of a lot of it is common sense. And of course, some of this stuff you got to learn. You got to see it with your own eyes. You got to witness it. So new farm, and I don't mean like 2 years old new. I mean like anybody that hasn't been on a vaccine program or has had a kind of willy-nilly approach to vaccines. So we're looking at this spring time frame first, and then we'll talk about fall. So the general idea is that the first time / times that you give vaccine, the body is not able to fully have a complete immune response. I think that's probably a good way to say it. It's complete in some respect, but it's not finished. So you have to give the vaccine, and then somewhere 2 to 4 weeks later, you have to give an additional shot. I think, you know, I would suspect that everybody listening knows that there is COVID-19 in the world and that the world is deploying vaccines to people for COVID-19. And the Pfizer and Moderna shots are 2-shot vaccines. And then you can, you know, go back to your, you know, your childhood when you were vaccinated for, who knows, depends on your age, chicken pox, mumps, measles, whatever. A lot of those were two shots. You need to get a booster. And that booster is that completion. It's the we're going to challenge the body with the first shot. It's not going to really know what goes on. It kind of develops an immune response. And then, boom, a couple weeks later, we're going to challenge it again. It lights those things up in their body. Full education happens. Antibody levels are high. And then we maintain those with our boosters throughout the year. So that's the general premise, right? We need to stagger our time back a little further to give us time to get those 2 shots in. So you remember the conversation we just had about, you know, the single shot prior to 30 days prior to fawning. Same principle applies, except that's your second shot. And then we need to go, you know, up to 30 days prior to that. So let's just run those numbers again. May 24th is your fawning date. So you go back, second shot, April 24th. First shot, May 24th. But here's the thing. The May 24th shot is the furthest back that you need to go. So you have from, March 24th. If I was saying May, March 24th. So on March 24th until, you know, first week of April, you can give your shot somewhere in that 2 to 4 week period. And then the next one, you got to have that, you know, 2 to 4 week buffer. 2 weeks would be the soonest to give the next shot, which would be April 24th. The same principle applies, gender, age, class, etc., to the established farm. Now, as far as timing goes in the fall, you know, if you were starting a program in the fall, that would happen around weaning-ish time. So you're looking somewhere between August and September, October. And you would do basically the same thing. You can kind of, you know, pick your dates within there. I would say that AI and breeding would be an opportunity to kind of work back from. So you can take your seeder in date. We never want to go past that because we don't mess with the hormones in the body that much. But your seeder in date would be a good place for a second shot. Or a first shot if you're established farm. But a second shot and then working back 30 days. That would probably be when you were separating your does. Maybe weaning fawns, etc. And then sorting those does in their breeding pens. So that's kind of a high-level overview of what these vaccine schedules look like, the kind of basic how-to. It's really pretty simple, and I strongly encourage you to, if you've listened to this and you want to know a little more, you know, the Servant Solutions website has a ton of really good educational, you know, programming on it. I'll also, everybody consumes their media a little different, and I've mentioned this previously. You know, maybe this podcast, if you're listening to it and you've made it, 40 minutes in, number one, thank you. I appreciate you listening to me ramble on about, health management topics and deer and whatnot. But if you've made it this long, maybe the podcast is your preferred, you know, mode of listening. You know, maybe you drive around a lot and or you're in a vehicle or you're, you know, sitting at a desk or you're on a tractor, whatever you do. Maybe you have some time in the evening. And I, like I said, I've been trying to do some YouTube on on some of these. So if you're watching on YouTube, thank you. You know, that's a way to consume more longer form information. Not everybody has an hour to do. So I strongly encourage you, if you're hearing this message, we have an Instagram account. I do videos almost every day. Those videos are like under 4 minutes. Some of them are a minute. Some of them are, you know, up to four. And it's basically, I don't want to call it like, not trying to cheapen it, but I call it the Daily Ramble. It's whatever I want to talk about that day. And we just, you know, like I covered, you know, overseeding and some ideas on clover here the other day. It was like 3 minutes, but I'm always talking about different stuff that we're doing on the farm as we're doing it. Things that I think are maybe fun or valuable. And that's another great way to consume some of our media and some of our content. So it's just punch Cervid Solutions into Instagram and you'll find us and give us a follow. You know, there's, I don't know, shit, I don't know, 300 videos there or something like that. That's a lot. There's all sorts of stuff there. So check that out. Our Facebook page, the Cervid Solutions Facebook page, you know, I'm always putting stuff on there. It's probably a little less than Instagram because it's more of written content and stuff, but that's another way. And, you know, if you have some suggestions on, you know, again, ways you like to consume your media, let me know. I'm all ears. I enjoy doing these videos. I enjoy doing the podcast. I like, you know, putting stuff out on the Instagram page. I've been trying to put stuff in the deer groups. I know that, like the Whitetails Unlimited page won't let me post anything because they think I'm profiting from posting my stuff there. I guess I could be. I find these shows to be pretty much, you know, 100% educational. The fact that you may buy some vaccine from me, great. I greatly appreciate that. But the concepts and theories that we talk about are pretty much ubiquitous. It can be for any type of vaccine. It could be for Vision 9, for Covaxin 8, for you name it. I just happen to use ours. So anyway, there's that. But I, you know, let me know what you guys like. If you like short videos, if you like the podcast, whatever. You know, if you really like this stuff and, you know, you want to support the channel, leave us a review. That'd be great. Head over to iTunes, leave us a review. Give us a thumbs up and a click on YouTube, whatever it is. We appreciate. Tell a buddy, tell a friend that might you know, benefit from it. You know, the goal here is simply to make us better deer farmers and ranchers and raise really high quality animals to the best of our ability and present ourselves to the public in a way that maybe we haven't before, and to have the, you know, the betterment of our industry, if you will. So with that, we're going to wrap up. And as always, stay tuned for another episode of North American Deer Talk.